The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Welcome back to Radio Wasteland, and our guest today is Sadhu Da. I assume I'm still saying that correctly.
Yep.
All right, and our topic today is Guminthong, but let's talk first a little bit about you and what you do to let our audience know. Of course, you've been on before a couple few months back, but let's remind them. What would you classify yourself as? I mean, I know you got a diverse collection of belief systems and ideas. So what would you call yourself?
In a nutshell, I'd consider myself a spiritual teacher and an occult professor. And you know, in Thai culture, an occult professor would be known as an ajarn. So that would be more closely related to kind of encapsulating all of what I do.
So I got to hop right in here now. I'm interested. You know, when you say occult, I'm like, first thing I think of is Lovecraft and Miskatonic and stuff. In Thailand, you say that they have a separate name. Is this something that they would take, for lack of a better word, more seriously than it's taken here?
Yes.
As a profession?
Yes. I mean, there are people who seek that out as a career. One of the things that's very common in Thai culture is you'll have a lot of young men who will join, you know, the temples and go under monkhood, and they'll become a bhikkhu, in Theravada Buddhist culture from Thailand, that would be a monk. So they become a bhikkhu, they become ordained for, you know, a couple years, kind of get their feet wet. If it's not for them, it's not for them. But some of them will learn magic or, you know, Thai witcha. Different traditions of certain practices of making like amulets or doing like love spells and charms and like wealth and prosperity for businesses and et cetera, just like a whole manner of things. And then you'll get people who are considered like lay persons with magic. And these are people who may not ever become a monk, or they might become a monk and then leave the monkhood. And they'll choose to embark on this career where they study under Lersi, Ruisi, Ajarns, Kru Bar Ajarns, and all these different like classifications of like what we would call like spiritual teachers, who teach certain types of traditions and practices. And so it's a huge, huge part of the culture. It saturates it all the way through its core. I mean, you can go and see like a schoolhouse or a government building and just out in public, because like 98% of Thailand is Theravada Buddhist. You'll see what are called Samphrakum, which are these little spirit houses, and they're all out in public, and like they're, you know, given offerings, and they're to appease local spirits in the land. So, I mean, these practices are deeply rooted because, Siam, as it was formerly known before it was Thailand, was very animistic, you know, like think of like shamans and like Native American culture and some of those animistic traditions and practices. This has been like a longstanding part of Thailand's culture and history, you know, for hundreds and hundreds of years. And so like what ended up happening in the 14th century was, the king was trying to convert people to Buddhism, and it didn't fully stick and take over, because you had so many people that did things like gnat worship, and they were like, well, you know, we've been praying to these coconuts and these spirits for like, you know, generations. Like, you're not just going to tell us that we need to start worshiping this Buddha guy. And, you know, what do we care? We have our own practices and traditions. Well, then it kind of became mandatory. And then So as we know with conversion, you know, especially like in like African cultures and the slave trade and how they would pray to these statues of the saints, but they were really praying to their voodoo gods and stuff like that. So like, you know, they kind of continued the same thing. And so you get this beautiful emergence of a truly unique form of Buddhism where you have these animistic and old and very like occult, you know, magic traditions influenced in with Buddhism. And so you have people that will go and they'll study it and they seek to learn how to make these different amulets and charms and do these different spell practices for the community.
You know, it's weird how the commonalities of man across the globe, you know, because it doesn't sound much different than the Holy Roman Empire coming into Europe and Britain, you know, how they end up merging a lot of that stuff. And, you know, Christmas we know is a combination of Yule and Saturnalia and all this stuff, Halloween and, All Saints Day, All Souls Day, you know, so it's kind of like an appropriation of the religion, but the religion lives on within it.
Yes.
Yeah. Huh. You know, so, but there, this whole countrywide, so even here, you know, thousands of years later, countrywide, this whole view of mysticism is accepted, or religion wide, or would this be like this sort of Kabbalah sect of the religion at this point?
Oh no, it is, it's so deeply ingrained that it's just part of everyday society. I mean, I'm sure maybe you've gone into like, you know, a local donut shop or nail salon or something that's like, whether it be Cambodian, Vietnamese or Thai owned business or, even like a Malaysian owned business. And, you know, a lot of these, like these Asian and like South, Asian like countries will have, you know, statues of like Nen Kwok for like luck. You see like a, you know, like a statue of a lady, you know, and then they have like coins or they have like incense they're burning and stuff. And it's just, you know, they're in their business, you know, here in America, but like that comes from, you know, their home country. And right. It's like such a common practice because like Nen Kwok was the daughter of a merchant. And, you know, it comes from an old Buddhist story where, you know, the Buddha had told this merchant who often would have trouble selling his wares. And he had this daughter whose name was Nen Kwok. And Nen Kwok would always want to go with him, but like the father wouldn't take her with him because I don't know, like maybe he figured she was going to get in the way of the business, that kind of thing. Well, the Buddha told her, told the merchant, you know, bring your daughter with you and you will sell out all your wares. And so he did. And from that day forward, he would always bring her with him. And so at some point, you know, that story became kind of like canonized in a sense. And, you know, so much so did Nen Kwok and her image and the representation of her and abundance and wealth with business practices. So now you have like Fa Yant, like so these cloths that have like an image of her stamped on it with like poly Khmer like sigils and spells on there. And so like these are sold to business merchants and they're said to like bring blessings and fortune to their business. And it's just such a common thing. Like you go into any of these kind of like shops and you'll see it or at least like statues, representations of like Nen Kwok. And that's just like one aspect. You know, you'll have like amulets and charms, like, you know, some of the ones I wear and, you know, the Thai police will wear like takruts. So do the Muay Thai boxers like around their arms and they're said to protect from like accidents and injury. And, you know, it's just, it's a normal part of culture, just kind of the same here in America where everybody's not Christian, but nobody bats an eye if someone says, I'm a Christian, or if someone starts to pray. Right. And, you know, like it's very common. We're used to that being like a dominant form of religion that's, you know, not to say it rudely, but it's so in your face that whether you're a Christian or not, you just kind of accept that like that's going to kind of be around you. And it's just part of the culture here in America. And it's very same in like Thailand and Malaysia and Cambodia and, you know, Vietnam. Like you just see these kind of things everywhere.
Right. So not not too dissimilar from a pendant of St. Christopher when you're traveling.
Right, exactly.
And I was raised Catholic. I didn't make it very far. My mom was over it pretty quick.
Working remotely and wanting to level up by maximizing your working experience? Stop by Drop-In Go Working at 155 Lake Boulevard East. Rachel left a 5-star review for Drop-In. Love this place. I moved to Reading recently from the Bay Area and work remotely full-time. Started going nuts at home, and luckily, this place is a great location and meets my needs beyond my expectations. They also left a 5-star review. Very productive place. It took me a few hours at Drop-In to finish a few days' work at home. Internet is super fast. Drop-In Go Working at 155 Lake Boulevard East in Reading.
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
A building that's meant to last is not built overnight. And for centuries, the cornerstone has been crucial to guide each brick and wall that comes after. A strong community relies on many cornerstones. So at Cornerstone Community Bank, we've taken our name to heart. Whether it's your business or your family, we'll provide the financial cornerstone that you need to build on. We're local. We're community. We're your cornerstone. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Aloha, this is Kevin, operations manager at Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. A professionally cleaned business sends a message to your paying customers. It says you are a company that cares about your image and always presenting the very best impression. Time after time, I've talked to clients who shopped for the lowest price and after a few months realized that their professional image was suffering. They didn't know who was actually coming into their offices to do the cleaning, and they just weren't getting the value they were paying for. Be wary of big-name companies that take your money, then hire unknown contractors to do the work. Since 1987, Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, your local professionals, have been offering the best in office cleaning by our screened, bonded, and insured staff. Take pride in your business and say aloha to your customers with the professional cleaning services from Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. Call 221-5868, 221-5868, MauiBob'sOfficeCleaning.com.
Radio Wasteland comes to you from the Reading studios of Free Fire Radio, 96.5 FM and AM 1460. Visit Radio Wasteland at Instagram at instagram.com/Radio Wasteland. Guman Thong.
Yes.
Thailand's little golden boy. What? There has to be something lost in translation in this title. So the
eerie thing is, so Guman Thong is essentially like a spirit effigy. And the reason why it's called Thailand's little golden boy is because it's now illegal. But the way that they used to be made was, and this would fall into like Barang, which is like black magic or like Thai voodoo. And what's really interesting to me is, you know, we immediately hear the word black magic, or we think of like voodoo, and our mind kind of conjures all these dark thoughts, like people hurting each other, curses, hexes, that kind of thing. You know, we think of like evil people preying on other individuals, and that's not really the case. See, in Thailand, especially with Thai magic, it's not so black and white, so to speak, no pun intended. But it's more of like, what is the intention behind it, regardless of the origin? So that kind of is, you know, of most importance. So this would be black magic, yes, but not in the sense of what the Western mind considers black magic. So you
I have to explain this a lot of the time when I'm talking to Christian. I'm a horror movie fan, and I'll talk to, and they're all, oh, I don't like the demon stuff. And, you know, we'll be talking about it, and like Asian cultures will use the word demon. So like my kids will watch anime and they're hucking around the word demon. And I'm like trying to explain to people, I'm just, oh, that's not a direct, you know, translation.
Right.
Term. Sorry, but go ahead.
Yeah, no. So the Guman Thong, it's illegal now, but the way that they used to be made, and the reason why it was called Thailand's little golden boy, was a stillborn fetus would be taken and roasted and charred over a fire in a cemetery while prayers and chants were, you know, performed over it, and certain ritual practices to appease, like, you know, the guardian of the cemetery and, you know, land spirits were performed. And then after it was charred, then it would be covered in gold leaf. And then the spirit of the stillborn child would then be adopted. And so it has like a very dark origin, but when you think about the way that people in Thai culture are seeing this and working with the spirit, it's actually kind of beautiful. So regardless of your beliefs, take into account this is the beliefs of the Thai people. So what they believe is that, you know, when a spirit will reincarnate, if it has not gotten to live a full life, so the full potential of an entire life, the stillborn spirit has been robbed of. So it's kind of like wandering around in the Bardo or, you know, like River Styx. So it's out there just alone. And the time it would take for it to actually reincarnate on its own and then be given another chance to live the human experience can be so far off in the future. So when these monks or these Ajarn or these different like Mofai and these spiritual practitioners who are taught how to do this specific type of Thai Wicca do this, they're kind of given this spirit like a contract. The spirit can kind of say no to this. It's not bound and restricted into this object. But what happens is the merit of a person who will adopt this statue is shared with this spirit. And when I say merit, I mean the good deeds, how they help other people, when they donate to charities, when they're kind. So these good karmic acts that they create, they're sharing it with this Gumenthong, so that when this Gumenthong achieves enough accumulation of merit that it wouldn't have the chance to achieve because it never got to live a full life, it will then be able to reincarnate faster, and it's going to have a higher incarnation when it reincarnates. So it's kind of like a huge, you know, benefit to the spirit to like help, you know, this business owner or to help this person find a lover or, you know, the protection or, you know, gambling and things like that. You know, they're used in very, you know, base level desire kind of things.
You know, there's a couple things that are really weird about this, you know, and my comparison that I've thought about a lot is, and I know this is weird, but I'm going someplace with it, is like circumcision. You know, it's very common in the Western world, getting less common, but I think like who was the first, you know, the question might be who was the first dude who did this to somebody? But my question is who were the first parents that are just all like, yeah, okay, that's a good idea. You should test that out on my kid, you know? And so here we are in this situation and they're just all, okay, listen, here's what we're going to do. We're going to cook your baby that didn't live and we're going to wrap it in gold. And then we're going to use that to provide ourselves with our basic desires. That's kind of what it sounds like. It sounds a little rude.
Well, it came from, Kun Pain.
And I'm not trying to come down on people's belief system. I'm just saying.
No, it's something very bizarre and foreign to a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's not even considered weird at all. And most, you know, of Thai people, you know, they're like, oh yeah, Gumenthong. And they're all like, you know, yeah, little golden boy, you know, like it's not even like weird thing. And there's a lot of amulets that have like chinathon, which is like human bone, and there's like, you know, namen prey oil, which is like human chin fat melted, you know, from a grave. Like, I mean, they use like human body remains and like a lot of
amulets. A lot of chin fat.
I mean, I have a bottle of namen prey oil.
You have a bottle of chin fat back there?
Yeah.
All right, that can't be legal.
I mean, it's not illegal per se.
It's frowned upon. It's highly frowned upon.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of so, like, what's the goose liver? you know, I don't know. It's all over the chef shows. Yeah. Okay. So that is weird, but I'm going to try to look at it from that standpoint. And that is the standpoint of community. Here's the unrealized life of this child. And now this unrealized life of this child now gets to be a part of the community and help us all move forward, maybe.
Yeah. And the way that it was first applied. So this is kind of like a modern day aspect of how they're used because things kind of evolve over time. But it came from this old Thai legend about like this general known as Kun Pain. And Kun Pain, you know, it's a pretty violent story, but then again, in a lot of like Thai love stories and like old tales, like they're very violent. And so Kun Pain, he killed his wife. And I don't remember the reason why. I don't want to misquote it, but I know that he killed his wife. His wife was pregnant and he didn't realize it. And then when he realized what he had done, he decided to rip the stillborn fetus from the wife's body. And then he, like, you know, created the first Gumenthong. And so then he used that Gumenthong to like crush his enemies. And, you know, that was like a whole thing, but the way that it became adopted into Thai culture was like parents, who had lost a child. You know, it was a very, very emotional thing. It's a very painful experience to go through. And they didn't necessarily want to say goodbye or let that go. And they had a hard time grieving. So they would take it, you know, this stillborn child, to monks or to these Ajarn, and they would ask them to turn it into a Gumenthong. And then part of the practices that go into taking care of a Gumenthong is you buy it little toys and you give it, you know, meals. When you eat meals, like, you set food aside and you feed the Gumenthong, like, you know, you offer it to come and eat with you, and like you talk to it like a child and you praise it and you speak with it. So like, for all intents and purposes, even if you weren't understanding the occult aspect of this, one could see from a Western mindset, psychologically speaking, how for a parent who is grieving the loss of their child who died prematurely, that this could be very therapeutic in a sense. Yeah. You know, as strange as it may be, you could see how that could be very therapeutic for a grieving parent. So there is that aspect of it in the culture. How there are people who literally have like their own child that, you know, was stillborn, and they've turned it into a Gumenthong, and they're raising this child, even though they're not physically alive.
Black Bear Diner is really spicing things up for the fall. Their classic homemade chili is back by popular demand. Grab a cup, bowl, or have it in their new chili cheeseburger. They've also added Frank's Red Hot Buffalo Wing Sauce to your choice of condiments. Spice it up at Black Bear Diner. Stop by 2605 Hilltop Drive right here in Reading or learn more at blackbeardiner.com.
Black Bear Diner.
This is RC with Tobacco and Brew. This month only, come down and celebrate Bricktoberfest. Tobacco and Brew is celebrating Oktoberfest this month with Brickhouse Cigars. Buy any 5 Brickhouse cigars and you will immediately receive a beer mug for free. Holding over 40 ounces of beer, this mug is colossal. Check out our fantastic beer selection while you're here. Tobacco and Brew, 2143 Hilltop Drive, Redding, California.
Take a stroll down Memory Lane at Memory Lane Antiques and Vintage. Whether you're looking for tools from the past, vintage clothing, collectibles, jewelry, or something that just reminds you of the good old days, you can find it at Memory Lane. Those special shabby chic and vintage style items are seen in every nook and cranny. So what are you waiting for? Sure, you can check out their Facebook page, but it's a lot more fun to explore the past and find your treasure. 1665 Pine Street in Reading, Memory Lane Antiques and Vintage.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Common Senior Living. One of the most rewarding things about what I do is watching the positive transformation that often occurs when a senior moves here to our beautiful, independent retirement community. Seniors can become isolated, find it hard to eat good, healthy meals, and even just get around. I call this a failure to thrive. At River Commons, we solve those challenges. You are surrounded by friendly people with similar life experiences. Chef Shalisa and her crew provide 3 delicious and healthy meals daily. Activities Director Ernie always has a wide variety of things to do, from arts and crafts to outings on our 25-passenger bus. Plus, we provide utilities, cable TV, scheduled transportation, weekly housekeeping, and more. We see seniors go from survive to thrive, and that is just a wonderful thing. Call today for a tour or luncheon a tour and experience River Commons for yourself. 221-2121 or on the web river-commons.com.
Thirty years ago, Simpson University arrived in Reading with a promise to serve the North State. Warmly welcomed by this far Northern California community, we forged lasting partnerships, serving our neighbors locally as well as globally. Building on our promise, Simpson University now offers over 20 degree programs. Our promise to be the gateway to world service begins in our backyard. Learn more about Reading's hometown university at simpsonu.edu.
You're listening to Chauncey and Kara on Radio Wasteland right here on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. That's Free Fire Radio. And don't forget to follow Radio Wasteland on Facebook at facebook.com/radiowasteland.us.
I can guarantee you one of the questions going through anybody's head listening to this, and me as well, is what does this thing look like after it's made?
So now we have an understanding of, like, the illegal practice that's no longer done, but we have now effigies that are made. For example, so they'll use human bone ash, and they'll make it like a little statue, as you can see.
Yeah, it's like a black statue of a baby with some gold on its head and dressed in cloth.
Yes. So this is a Gumenthong, and then you also have ones that are made like as like a statue or like an amulet. So like a statue one, a wooden one I have, I'll show you. This would be this one right here.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so a wooden statue that's been painted with gold, and it's small, like a large chess piece.
Yeah, so what they'll often do is they'll still do the traditional ceremony of, like, calling the spirit and the occult practices behind that, the chanting of the katha, you know, the infusing of the spirit into the object. But what makes it a Gumenthong there's two requirements. One, it has to be the spirit of a child that died in birth. And then it also has to be like in the effigy of like, you know, like a little boy. So Kumari Thong would be a little girl. So a Gumen Thong would be a little boy. So, you know, there are female versions of it and there are male versions of it, but the male ones, for some reason, I don't know why, I couldn't honestly answer, those tend to be more popular. And then you even have what are called Lukrak, which is like an aborted one. So that's like an entirely different thing. So like that is like the you know, the spirit was never even like, you know, like fully formed. So almost like you could say like you know, just like the cells of it. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like if you were to get an abortion and, you know, it's not even like fully formed as like, right, you know,
so
a baby yet.
Would a miscarriage count for that as well then?
Yeah. So those would be Lukrak. So there's Lukrak and there's Gumen Thong. Gumen Thong would indicate that, you know, like it was stillborn. So like, it, you know, it had actually reached, you know, the full end of gestation essentially, or enough to be like fully formed as an actual baby.
Now, when you showed me this, so when you were first telling me this, I didn't think of it as being bone ash that had been molded. I was thinking that they're cooking the blood. Like dried out, you know, what was the original one?
That's how they were
originally. A little more grotesque, I assume.
Yeah, like it would be an actual, like literal baby carcass. And like they would generally, like, so what would happen is, there was like a very common practice where like hospitals would like drop these off at the temples. And then the monks would do the whole ceremony, or like parents would go, you know, to like an Ajarn, or they would go to like a monk and they would have them make it, or they would get permission from a family member who had say over this, and they would actually go to the graveyard and dig up the child's corpse. So like, that's how it used to be done, but in Thailand, they made that illegal. So now, if you do that, you will go to prison. You know, you will get in a lot of trouble, and they're not allowed to be sold anymore. However, because, you know, adaptation, that's when it started moving into making the statues from, like, basically, like, you know, clay mixed with actual bone ash. So like now they're not using the actual corpses anymore, but they're still using corpse ingredients, which for some reason isn't illegal. don't really get that.
I'm sure,
but
there's a health factor going on here.
Right.
Yeah. So what about here? I mean, so I got this friend, I'll leave his name out, in high school, we all played in bands together. Okay, it's a funny story. You know how when you get sick, you get a gland will swell up,
mm-hmm.
you know, on your neck or something. Well, for him, it was his left testicle. And Oof. He couldn't show up to band practice because his left testicle had swollen up to the size of a softball and died, and they had to remove it. And another band member said, oh yeah, no, oh, totally, man. I won't tell anybody. And he went and told everybody at school the next day. But,
of course.
But they wouldn't let him keep it. You know, we were like, oh, did you get to keep the testicle? But they wouldn't let him keep it. So it's like, I assume I guess you get bone, you can have a stillborn baby cremated and they'll give you the ash, I guess. Won't they?
Yeah, I would imagine so. I mean, you have the right to, like, to bury. I mean, so it's weird because, like, I haven't really encountered that over here. So I don't know, like, you know, I would imagine it's probably not legal. What is it, like, desiccating a corpse or something like that? I mean, right. I know there yeah. are, like, charges you can get for that. And, I mean, clearly in Thailand, you know, it's – much easier to get away with going into a cemetery and doing things versus over here. You know, we tend to have security guards and things like that. Things tend to be a little more lax over in Thailand. And in Thailand, like, you know, they'll let you, like, keep your organs and stuff like that when you leave the hospital. Things are, they're different, you know, they're different than over here. So, you know, that's kind of why that was kind of a thing for a while before it stopped being a thing. But yeah, I can't imagine that you would really be able to make one of those over here legally without, you know, some sort of suspicion or repercussion. Or if you, like, you know, let's say, like, you had a girlfriend or wife or for whatever reason, you know, they were down for that and y'all actually did that. If you tried to sell it or started showing, telling people about it, I'm pretty sure the cops would knock on your door at some point relatively soon.
Right. Yeah. All right. So you were showing me, the amulet that you were wearing and we were talking about this is, do they turn or would you wear the Gumin thong?
Yeah. They do have amulets that are like small enough that you can wear. So this one I have is a Bayage, which is a different type of amulet. It's like cowrie shell filled with mercury. And then it's sealed. And so like, it's got like poly spells on it. It's used for like protection and like repelling black magic and things of that nature. And by black magic, I mean stuff that's specifically set to harm you. The Gumin thong like necklaces and stuff that you could have, like I have one, that I've been working on cause I make amulets as well. So this one was, like an actual necklace, but I turned this into like a spirit box and I added stuff to like empower it further. But you I can see how this would fit into a locket, you know?
Right. I see.
It's the representation of the baby.
Yeah. It's like it was pressed and then it could be turned into a locket, right?
Yeah. So those will have like holy powders, bone ash, like different herbs and stuff and like clays. And then it'll be like mixed together. And it's really interesting because like a lot of the ingredients that are, added together for power, tend to be things that would sometimes make scholars' heads just flip. Like to make some of the holy powders that the monks make, this just sounds like, why would you do that? So they will take the oldest, most sacred and rare, like Buddhist, like books, you know, that they'll have and like scriptures and like, you know, like, and we're talking really, really old, like very valuable. And they'll take the pages from it and they'll burn them and they'll use the ash and mix it in with other ingredients. And it's like, well, why would you do that? Well, the rareness and the sacredness of it, like, you know, is considered to give it more power. So then that becomes like ingredient because when you add all those ingredients together, along with the katha, like the chanting, activating and calling the spirit and encoding with like the commands, and then you put the spirit in the object, all those sacred ingredients add to be like a battery, right? So they give the spirit, you know, juice to operate off of, rather than you just basically having, you know, this human spirit that might normally attach and feed on you. So then it has an actual source, an object, you know, a fetish or totem, right? That it can feed off of and accrue, reciprocal energy that just is constantly feeding it. And so it's able to do things without having to have a human host to feed from.
Thank you. Seco Manufacturing Company presents How People Make Things at Turtle Bay now through January 9th. Explore this new and interactive exhibit where kids can learn firsthand about the tools and processes used to make objects that we see and use every day. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
I'm celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6.05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6.05 p.m., right after the news, for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
Remodeled kitchen, bathroom, or backyard patio? There's a lot of choices, but only one leader, Estate Granite.
Mike Huber has such a professional attitude and a can-do work ethic that makes him a joy to work with. Mike and his crew worked to have our new kitchen finished in 5 days. We came back to a true work of art.
Hi, this is Brian Salato, broker and co-owner of The Real Estate Group. In today's competitive market, I think what's important is that the house is dialed in and turnkey. And what's important is that the kitchen has been renovated, the bathrooms have been renovated, granite, beautiful cabinetry. Those things make a significant difference.
Mike at Estate Granite has an eye for detail, an attention to perfection, and a quality build crew that are masters of their craft. Mike was there from start to finish.
Hi, this is Mike from Estate Granite. I know how important quality to a homeowner is, so give me a call at 241-STONE or come by our showroom at 4900 Mountain Lakes Boulevard or visit us at EstateGranite.com.
Since 1890, Stifel has established itself as one of the nation's leading wealth management and investment banking firms by understanding clients' hopes and dreams, focusing on building and preserving wealth. Simply put, when you achieve your goals, we achieve ours. I'm proud to be a part of Stifel as a financial advisor. This is Susan Eastman, First Vice President Investments. Call today for quality time well spent. 530-244-7199. Again, 530-244-7199.
Hi, this is Mark from Haven Humane Society. It has been a challenging couple of years, and through it all, our amazing team has continued to save lives. We have so many fantastic animals that are looking for their forever homes, and with adoption fees so low, now is the time to add to your family. With puppies, kittens, dogs, cats, and so many more, we have the perfect addition. Come join our team as a volunteer and help in an area that works for you. Walking dogs, socializing cats, helping our veterinary hospital, or folding laundry. We have many opportunities and welcome all volunteers. For more information, please visit our website at havenhumane.org or follow us on Facebook. On behalf of the entire Haven team, thank you for all of your continued support as together we get closer every day to North State with no more homeless pets.
Turtle Bay's fall plant sale has been extended now through the end of the year. Don't miss this chance to save big during this key season for planting perennials. The nursery is open Wednesday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
Have you been putting off getting your colonoscopy due to COVID restrictions? Well, there's no better time than now. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, colorectal cancer screenings have declined by 86%, and as a result, up to 10,000 more deaths are projected over the next decade. With early detection, colon cancer has a 90% survival rate, and it may even be preventable with a colonoscopy. At Reading Endoscopy Center, our number one priority is the health and safety of our patients, and our center has always been committed to maintaining strict infection control and prevention protocols. Schedule your colonoscopy today by calling us at 530-246-7000 or visiting readingendoscopy.com. Visit readingendoscopy.com.
You're listening to Free Fire Radio, 96.5 FM, 1460 AM. You're listening to Radio Wasteland with Chauncey and Kara. Find all our shows and archives by visiting Radio Wasteland at radiowasteland.us.
And then you have this picture of this person on this amulet that's being sold. And you know, it kind of puts it into a different context and gives it a different, you know, feeling entirely than like my Peepong, you know, spirit over here. When you're looking at the picture like of an actual like girl in her late teens, early 20s, like actual picture of her. And you're realizing like the spirit of her and how she died, you know, and that's in that amulet, you know, like that one's, I'm kind of on the fence with that, because, like, you know, I'm not necessarily, like, you know, really into those.
Yeah, well, I mean, it does feel like it's, and again, I'm just going to throw out
too personal
thinking. I'm not, well, it seems on the brink of exploitive.
Exactly. Yeah. Because I think of it, so, like, I have this tattoo, you know, as my cousin Chris. So my cousin Chris, unfortunately, he was drinking and driving last year in April. And so it's been a little over a year now. And he passed away. And, you know, it was a violent death. You know, it was horrible. And he was young, you know, he's 27, and I miss him greatly. And, like, I have some of the pieces from the wreckage site, and, like, I have pieces of glass from the windshield that he went through that has his blood on it. And I don't use that as an amulet at all whatsoever. I actually made sure that I crossed the spirit over, but I keep that as, like, just, like, you know, it's something close to me, because, like, it's all that I have left of him, you know? And so, like, that's kind of a completely different type of, you know, item that I have. Like, it's not even used for magical purposes whatsoever. I would feel very emotional about somebody taking those pieces of glass with my cousin's blood on it and turning it into an amulet. I would have an issue with that. So, nice. Like, I get what you're saying. Like that is exploitive.
So a lot it has of times, to be a part of the person's belief system, and frankly, it's better than a lot of people here in the West do. You know, it's like I'm constantly driving around, and I'll see, like, somebody's Cadillac Escalade, and it's got a big sticker on the back window that says, like, "In loving memory of John Smith," and that's all it says. And I'm all, does that mean the car is in loving memory of John Smith? You know, what does this sticker mean? So my message to people out there is, don't put a sticker on your car that makes it look like your car is in memory to a dead person. It's weird.
It is weird. I mean, I'm kind of like, because, like, I'm a stranger. I have no idea who anyone in your family or your loved ones are.
Yeah.
And then the only thing I'm knowing about you, a complete stranger that I wouldn't be paying attention to at all, is like, oh, you know, that person in your life died and I'm staring at their photo. You know, or I'm, like, reading their death dates. Like, I don't need to know that. Like,
the news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.